Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the November 30 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the Mississippi and Missouri rivers are raging, at least as a topic of low-flow debate. We'll discuss the logistics and much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with AgriSource Company's Bill Turney from Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today in studio include Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Matt Bennett, how has the discussion about the low flow on the Mississippi River shown up in cash basis this week?
Well, I guess it didn't really show up quite like I thought it might. Whenever I looked at basis this week, their indicator, we weakened up just a hair, and I think it might have had a function as much with anything to do with the prices going up. And, you know, what farmers did have corn were able to move a little bit, and I think it's definitely a scary situation as we move forward. But, you know, I think we saw more movement probably in the last 2 to 3 weeks trying to ship beans down the river, and I think it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward, but it softened up just a little bit and really didn't do anything for our elevator.
And Jackie Bakes?
Well, I think, you know, one of the reasons that we might have saw some weakening in the corn basis, and I would expect the corn basis to weaken a great deal if the Mississippi does close. You know, St. Louis is a delivery point, more for corn than it is for beans, and, you know, that stretch of the river that goes from St. Louis to Cairo is just so important to the export market. The minute that you can't deliver there, costs immediately go up. And so what happens when costs go up? Basis gets wider. Now, on the bean side of things, I know Gulf basis today was at $1.10 over. And some of the people I talked to say if Gulf basis gets to $1.20 over, then you're going to start to see a lot of railing of beans coming out of Chicago and places like that. So it's, I think the positive side of basis for beans is going to be there until we find out what's really going on, just because we have so much demand. But, you know, maybe it's a good thing we don't have as much corn demand right now as what we wish we did.
And Pete Manhart.
Well, I think a big reason that it didn't change much was look at the flat price. On the board, we had beans 88 cents on their high this week above last week's low, and corn was probably close to 50 above last week, so they didn't need to raise the basis. They actually had better flat prices this week during the week than they did last week.
January soybeans this week, a $14.60 high. They're low at 14.60 and three quarter. Remember, we give you the day trade overnight, which is all one electronic trade now, but we give you the open outcry as well. 14.38 and three quarters was the settlement price. The difference Friday to Friday was a 20-cent increase in price. November beans at $13.45. Finished 19 and three quarters of a cent higher. Was that a nice relief after kind of a rough week couple of weeks heading into Thanksgiving?
Most definitely, and I think I saw a whole lot more interest this week and, you know, looking at some 13 stuff than what we've seen for quite some time, actually. And so I think moving forward, guys are looking at these prices and wondering the what-if scenarios, and obviously we can set some sales in place anytime in here and go ahead and do something to re-own them. But bottom line is, if we end up and South America straightens out and they have a huge crop on the kind of acres they're talking about, there's no question that there's bound to be a fair amount of weakness in the bean market.
Yeah, that is one of the big what-ifs, the South American crop at this point.
Yeah, that it really is. And if you look at where we've come from, again, last week's lows, 88 cents to this week's highs yesterday or the day before, and that's a big move up. If we do that another week or two, you're really looking at big money on the beans. I just don't know. I think the weather in South America is going to help push that one way or the other.
Jackie, can you help me put logistically a couple of things in place as it relates to products and imports or exports from the United States to China? It appears that they're looking not to import whole beans at this point, but they're searching now for bean meal or one of the products. Is that easier to rail? Is it easier to ship? Logistically, what kinds of things happen, and what does it mean to you in the grand scheme of things? And you can take up whichever part of that makes sense to you.
I was kind of wondering which part you wanted me to go to.
I wondered.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I think, you know, it's a typical situation. It depends upon where they need to go with it and what their ability is to be able to crush in those particular areas. There are times when whole bean price is less expensive, and processing is, you know, the processed meal here costs too much. But if they're moving it to different parts of the country where they don't have as good access to crushing, and crushing margins haven't been great over there, they're better off taking meal from us. But the other side of it is they need a lot of oil, too, you know, and so it depends upon their needs. You never know. I mean, I thought it was interesting when we saw them take, you know, they took 290,000 metric tons of beans this week, and then you looked at export sales, and they won't show up till next week, but they were pitiful. But meal and oil were outstanding. And so I think some of what they're looking at is, when you said logistics, I think it's the logistics coming out of Brazil. You know, Brazil's going to have, Pete talked about this huge crop, okay? That's 20% bigger crop than normal. You know, they don't have enough trucks, enough storage, enough port capacity, and they've got tons of delay problems.
And this week, in the last few days of this week and the week before, look at what oil has done as far as what we've sold. We've already sold more than 100% of what USDA says we're going to sell for the year. And if you looked at what we sold in a Thanksgiving holiday week, 365,000 tons of meal last week, those two are going to drive things, I think, or keep them where they're at to drive them higher.
I think whenever we talk about China and we look towards the South American crop, you know, I look for them to go ahead and be importing a fair amount of beans off of us and products probably for the next couple months. But after that, I think they're probably going to be in more of a wait-and-see mode. And I know logistically it's not going to be as easy coming out of South America, but we're also looking at a potentially cheaper product. And the Chinese, I think, are going to probably want to wait that out a little bit there. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, we're so far ahead of what we've been on the five-year average on these sales that we're going to definitely be able to meet the USDA goal, in my opinion.
You know, and I don't know how much of the Mississippi River issue is plague into this either. You know, from that standpoint, you know, if you look at the Mississippi, I know I talked to somebody the other day, and he just made this remark. He said, and he's in the know. He said, if we take every bean that's on the Ohio, every bean that's in the Midwest that's below, you know, St. Louis, and move them, we can't fill all the barges we already have sold. And so, you know, if I'm China and I know that I need meal and I know I need and I can take oil besides, I'm probably going to buy some extra meal, too, just to have it on hand.
When we talked with Zwicker on Thursday afternoon, he was on the Ohio River in Jeffersonville, Indiana, looking across towards Louisville. And he said that the bases there had really jumped, especially for beans at that point. And he expected it to continue along that Ohio River area. And I'm wondering, that's all good and well for farmers that are along the Ohio River, but it may not bode as well for farmers further up into the interior. But maybe you're telling me something slightly different, that they can rail. Maybe they can rail to the Pacific Coast. I'm not certain who benefits.
Well, as far as who benefits from that situation we were talking about, obviously we don't ride in here, but you know, when you're looking at beans, I mean, where's basis play going to be on beans? And I think, you're probably looking at the next 3 months, you know, is probably going to be your best chance. I mean, obviously, we're going to be tight going into next harvest. There's no question about that. But I also expect that our exports will come to somewhat of a halt as we move forward. And so if I was hoping for a basis play, I'd probably be looking for it before too awful long.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so new crop beans above $13 on the settlement this week. Is that enough to make you let loose of another little bit of them?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with $13 beans. And historically speaking, we have to look at it from a profitability standpoint. And I think the one thing I really try to do with my farmers, I want to get them to a standpoint where they're not worried about what they got for beans this past fall, because we've got two different years we're talking about, and things could be drastically different, you know, in 10, 12 months.
Well, I think when you look at the, you know, there's always justification. I would rather take the position of not making cash sales at this point in time, because we really don't know where we are as far as the weather goes. But you can use put strategies that you can protect your February crop price, and it basically protects your unsold bushels at the same time. So I think that you have to sit back, and as risk managers, like all three of us are, and you say to yourself, you're going to make the assumption that we are going to get good crops, that it is maybe going to start raining, because none of us know. And look at the money that you have. If you use put options right now on beans, you can do 1360 puts.
We hit 1315, I believe, this last week. We went back then into the 12s. I think new crop, you need to above 13 start looking at. I'd look at 20, 25, 30. I don't know how much the old crop will pull it up, but I want to have some stuff done and placed before South America's big acreage comes in. We have to assume they will have an average crop on those huge acreages. So I want to have 20, 30% of it sold for next year, along with getting rid of, in the next 3 months, all of my old crop.
I agree with Pete, and I think the main thing I want to impress, no matter what strategy you're using, is simply protecting value, because whenever I look forward to next year, I see a ton of profitability, and I think that's the name of the game. So whether we're going to use put strategies or you know, cash sales or a combination of several different things, I just want to have something in place so I can protect some value.
Let's switch topics and do this with coarse grains now. July wheat this year or this week at $8.70 and a half, up 16 and a quarter cents. Corn futures finished the December contract at $7.48, up 2 and a half on the week from the previous week, and new crop December at $6.35 and a half, a dime higher. I went through both of those on purpose because it seems to me that wheat futures appear to be holding the coarse grains higher, simply on the short supply around the planet. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, no, you're very right. I mean, you know, when you look at, and it isn't just a short supply around the planet. It's the anticipation that if this weather doesn't change, we're going to, by February 1st, we're probably going to cut our U.S. crop by 80 million bushels or more. And so that's being built into the market already now.
And we've already started on corn at 629, 639, 642 it hit this week. Hedging or buying puts for that and on next year's crop. And I think you do that every dime or 20 cents up. And I think, you know, if we have a great crop here with good weather on corn, you could see corn 450.
Right. And your idea here is if wheat's going to pull it higher, you want to take advantage of it on the normal side of a corn crop that will crash the price eventually.
That is correct.
And you agree with that?
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think whenever you look at corn and you look at the input prices that we have this year, they're fairly similar to last year, actually. Guys that booked earlier in the year pretty well locked in the same sort of fertilizer and anhydrous prices. Seed prices, I think, are going to be a little bit higher for about everyone. But bottom line is, whenever we're looking at that and we look at what we could have, you know, even normal yields, you know, you're looking at a ton of profitability. Again, that's what's important to me.
Well, that's right. And for anybody who hasn't booked all of their fertilizer or all their chemicals, you also have to sit back and think how much of an interruption is the Mississippi River. A lot of our chemicals and fertilizer come up the Mississippi, and it's going to cost more because of transportation.
Turn your attention to livestock very quickly. February contract in the live cattle at 132.72 and a half, settlement price up 270 for the week. March feeders at 148.42 and a half, or down $2, and the February lean hogs at $86.92 and a half, were up four, or rather down 45 cents. Is there reason at all for these end users to take advantage of prices this week, or are we just waiting it out for them for a lower level?
I think you would, if you're feeding livestock, you need to be, anytime we have downside moves, be locking in some things to feed your livestock. On the other end, anytime we have the big up moves, I think you need to cover the sales of your livestock.
Of course, you're listening to Commodity Week. I'm going to have to add it anyway. Of course, you're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, who you heard, Jackie Vakes, it's Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, and Matt Bennett from TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois, and we'll return in just a couple minutes. We'll talk with Bill Turney of AgriSource Company.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Planting of corn and soybeans in Argentina remains about 10 percentage points behind last year's pace due to excessive soil moisture. Earlier this week, heavy rain fell in southern Santiago del Estero and northern Cordoba, stalling planting, while drier conditions farther to the east allowed for some field work. Planting problems will continue in Argentina. More rain fell across most areas on Friday, and additional widespread rain is expected to arrive on Monday and continue during much of next week. Rainfall of 2 to 4 inches will stop corn and soybean planting yet again across much of Argentina through next week. In South Brazil and Paraguay, it was a mixed scenario this past week, with Paraguay and neighboring southern Mato Grosso do Sul, Brazil, receiving heavy rainfall of 1.75 to 3.5 inches. Meanwhile, much of South Brazil from Rio Grande do Sul northward through Sao Paulo remained dry. After a wet October, this region turned quite dry in November. Rainfall deficits of 2 to 5 inches for the month in South Brazil are of concern for developing corn and soybean plants. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are expected across South Brazil and Paraguay for the start of this weekend, and more are expected at times next week. This anticipated rainfall will be beneficial for crops and help stabilize soil moisture, but with recent deficits, more rain will be needed in the weeks ahead. One area without concerns due to dryness or wetness right now is center west into southeast Brazil and Bahia. Ample rainfall of late has maintained adequate to wet soil moisture conditions. Continued periodic thunderstorms into next week and beyond should keep conditions favorable for crop development. That's your South American weather update for Commodity Week. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This is the November 30 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. In studio with us, Jackie Vakes, Pete Manhart, and Matt Bennett. On the phone line from AgriSource Company out of Chicago, Illinois, is Bill Turney. Thanks so much, Bill, for taking the time with us. As you look at the marketplace from your vantage point, and you think about distribution of commodities during the winter months, does it really matter very much if St. Louis to Cairo is shut down on the Mississippi River?
Well, yes, it matters. But right now, globally, if you're a soy complex end user, an importer, you really don't have any place to go but the United States. So one of the things, Jackie made the comment that anytime transportation costs go up, basis weakens, and that's true. But it weakens less when the import the export market is extremely strong, because in effect the buyer pays up. But she's absolutely correct that there's always going to be a weakening, but maybe it'll be a lot less than people expect for soybeans. For corn, I would expect that you're going to see, relatively speaking, more basis weakness than for soybeans, simply because our export shipments, at least we're keeping track, are at almost a 40-year low. So the cumulative shipments for September, October, November are almost at a 40-year low. We anticipate that that's going to reverse itself, but it hasn't happened yet. So as long as our shipment pace is low, and if our transportation costs from the interior to the Gulf goes up, then it'll probably result in a larger basis weakening for corn than it certainly would for soybeans.
So on your old crop corn, would you be using puts or using cash or doing something to protect the price we have now?
First off, I had a conversation, rather pleasant conversation, with a farmer just this morning talking about that. So I had an opportunity to get my thoughts in order. And here they are. Don't sell corn.
Well, that was short.
Why? Don't sell cash. Don't sell futures. Don't buy puts. Now, that is purely from the standpoint of where we think corn basis is going, corn futures is going. Now, if I put my hat on that I used to wear when I was at Kansas State University, and we were very much concerned about overall farm financial management, if a farmer like this farmer said to me, I need to get a quarter of my remaining crop sold between now and January 1st. You got a problem with that? Heck no, I don't have a problem with that. So the other people on the panel that deal with farmers every day and are looking at overall farm financial management, though I believe corn basis is going higher, though I believe corn futures is going higher, if somebody said to me, I need to get some corn sold, these are good prices, these are profitable prices, I would not argue with them.
And you're a don't sell corn, though, on old and new crop both?
Again, if someone says, we've got an anticipation of buying crop revenue insurance, we know what our fertilizer is, we know what our cash rents are, and these are good profitable prices, I want to price them the 13 crop, I would not argue with them, because our focus overwhelmingly is where is the market going, the cash, the basis, the futures. But the people on the panel that have to deal with the whole farm, the whole financial management, risk management, we don't have a problem. I don't have a problem. We don't have a problem with pricing a portion of the 13 crop. But if somebody says, what do I think is going to happen to corn prices, old and new, I think they're going up.
So, Bill, if you're talking to a farmer who, and I appreciate what you just said there, you're talking to a farmer who's booked all of his inputs, and he's been burnt in the last few years a couple of times with booking all of his inputs without selling any output. Is there a strategy you might employ that would maybe be a limited risk strategy, something that you might recommend?
If somebody says, I want to price 20% of my crop now. I always like to get it. I mean, I'm pricing it well above my break even based on my APH yields. I would never argue with somebody for doing something like that. I really liked the discussion that I heard earlier about options. And one of the things I've been trying to do is keep up with implied volatility. And I haven't had an opportunity to update my analysis for corn and soybeans, but I did do it for wheat. The last time I did it for corn and beans was about a month ago, and I don't think the picture has changed. In the case of wheat, I think this is emblematic or symptomatic of what I've seen in all three markets. On November 28th, July 2013, wheat futures, Chicago wheat futures, were 43% higher than a year ago, than July 28th, 2012. But the implied volatility, the implied volatility of July 13, 2013 wheat options was 22% lower. Futures, 43% higher. Implied volatility, 22% lower. I even have some models that try to project what implied volatility should be based on seasonality and based on underlying futures volatility. And right now we have got implied volatility way below what the market models would suggest it should be. And we, when I was doing this analysis a month ago for all three commodities, corn and soybeans as well, we saw the exact same thing. So clearly, for those producers that want to get some price protection on whatever portion of their 2012 crop or even their 2013, options are exceptionally cheap based on the assessment of what should the implied volatility be and what is implied volatility now compared to a year ago, 3 or 4 years ago, or according to some models. So clearly, in terms of what strategy to use, if you want to get some price protection and you want to, let's say, be aggressive on the portion of the crop that you price, options are one way to consider, particularly given how, relatively speaking, they are cheap compared to what one would expect.
Right. One of the things, Bill, you mentioned wheat, of course. So, you know, if we don't get any rain by February 1st, how wide do you think that the corn-wheat spread is really going to get?
Well, I listened to some comments that you made earlier about wheat, and the reason I seem to have wheat on the brain is I have to go to the Middle East next week and do a presentation at a Middle East North African wheat and flour conference. And so I've been pinging people all over the world about wheat. And one of the issues that came up was that soft white wheat out of the PNW is $5, $10, $15 a metric ton cheaper than corn out of the PNW. You have to understand that when you're talking about wheat, hard red winter wheat, hard red spring, durum, white wheat, soft red winter wheat, they're all different commodities. And clearly, that's shown up in the July Kansas City, July Chicago spread this week. People are looking at the different fundamentals. My slide set is rather alarming. I don't like to play that role. I don't like to go into a theater and yell fire. That's not my nature. That's not what I've learned how to do commodity analysis and everything else. But I am extremely concerned about the risk that the global wheat market faces, and that will clearly have some spillover support on corn.
On that Bill note, Bill, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. Bill Turney is with Ag Resource Company. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. Now time for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
I'd just say, keep an eye on these markets, and if you've got a chance for some profitability, take a little bit of it and enjoy your holidays.
Pete Manhart?
I would be saying that same thing. We do expect higher prices in the next 2 months, but when that South American crop comes in, we could see things go downhill. So be pricing some old crop and be looking at protecting new crop.
And Jackie Banks.
Well, 2012 was a very challenging year. It doesn't look like 2013 is adding up to be anything different, so make sure you've got your risk management cap on.
Our thanks to Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Matt Bennett of TGM. That wraps up this November 30 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.